You're listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
Hello, friends. I have a special surprise for you. I have my former co-host, Don Johnson, who's been traveling all over, working on his film, Unprotected, movie screenings all over. Don, it's good to have you.
Timmery, it's great to be back. It's been too long.
Good to hear your voice. And we have an action-packed show. Man, things going on with the gentleman who was the first man to identify as non-binary, having his driver's license, birth certificate changed, has come out as of February of this year. And he is proudly holding up his original military ID and saying, I am a man, and what has been done to me has been so detrimental for my health. We're going to talk about that a little later on, along with Sam Smith, who's one of the musical artists behind one of the most recent James Bond movies, and some of his conversation as well. But first, Don, what's going on with Unplanned? Where can people find it now?
So we are winding down some of the theater screenings with Unprotected, but you can still host it in a theater if you want. There's a lot of churches still screening it, but we have moved on to the sort of final stage in every movie's journey, and that is to get it out on DVD and digital streaming. So as of just a few weeks ago, it is now available on places like Amazon Prime and Vimeo On Demand. Amazon Prime, of course, is a big one, major audience. Amazon Prime. So we're stoked that it's out on Prime, and we've got thousands of people watching it on Prime. So if you've got Prime, you can watch it for free. Just look for Unprotected. And so it's exciting, you know. It's getting to an audience that I sort of always wanted it to get to. I know we've talked about this a lot in the past, Timmery, but the getting the message out to people who wouldn't maybe normally see it or watch it is sort of my goal whenever I make a movie, right? So like my first film was Convinced. It's about conversion to the Catholic faith, and I know that it's been like really inspiring to a lot of Catholics, and a lot of Catholics have watched it and used it, and that's awesome. I mean, I just love what God's doing with it. But ultimately, I made the movie for non-Catholics, right? I mean, it's to get people to think more deeply about their faith. Well, the same thing with Unprotected. I made it for people who wouldn't normally watch a movie about the sexual revolution and contraception. And so we branded it in a way that it would be accessible to people and told the story sort of historically. And now it's on Prime. So it's reaching those people. I do have a request of our audience, so Timmery.
Please tell us.
Yeah. So as you know, if you put anything out online, comments and ratings flow freely, right?
And this is a
movie that, of course, a lot of people, I mean, and you know, we knew it going in, but a lot of people are going to watch it and they get angry about it. And frankly, I don't even focus on the anger so much as I think what the anger reveals, and that's the hurt. It's the hurt underneath, right? So when you watch a movie about the devastating effects of sexual promiscuity and abortion and divorce and all of these things, and listen, millions of women have gone through that, and that's hurtful. And a lot of times, you know what? I mean, sometimes it's great and people cry about it, but other times they get angry. And so, all that, I have a request. If people could go on to Amazon, because it's either got 5-star reviews or 1-star. You know what I mean? There's no in between, because it's 5 or 1. And so any reviews you can do on Amazon would be awesome.
And you know what, Don? I was actually looking at the fact that people can watch on Amazon, but which, by the way, thank God. This is huge. For those who are listening, the fact that Don's film, Unprotected, exposing what is happening in the sexual revolution, and really it being narrated at times by the story of a young woman who lived that sexually promiscuous lifestyle, but was still kind of the good Catholic girl in some senses, and how unfulfilling it was. But I think the reason you're getting, you know, viewers to comment that are unfavorable is because it's exposing what's pulling at their heartstrings still, but it's exposing their deepest wounds. And sometimes that projects anger and fear. And so, you know, I think that those who are commenting with adverse opinions are really people who unfortunately have been wrapped into this lifestyle and don't want to hear it.
Yeah, and it, you know, and it doesn't, it doesn't bother me. I don't want to make that clear. One-star reviews absolutely do not bother me, especially when it's clear that they have watched to the end of the movie, which they have, right? I mean, which is, wow, okay, so you actually want, which is what I want. That's all I want. It's actually more about the algorithm. I'm concerned that Amazon starts to bury your movie. And that's why people do the one-star reviews, because with the algorithms, they start to bury it and it doesn't pop up on as many screens. And so we need more of the five-star reviews to keep that balanced. And so, but I'm so excited about how God's using the movie, Timmy. I mean, it's cool that the message is getting out there, and that, you know what, it is cool that Amazon is showing it, right? I mean, we tried to get wide theater release and we were very, very close, and ultimately it got nixed. Not because of the quality of the movie, right? The quality of the movie was fine. It was the message. It's important. And I know you've talked about, the new movie Unplanned, for example. I mean, it's awesome that these movies are out in the theater. So we got to keep at it. It's, we're making an impact, I think.
That's Don Johnson. For those who are just joining us, please go and check out his movie Unprotected, different from, as I mentioned before, Unplanned, which we're just promoting. But Unprotected, really head over, make sure that you get your teenagers to watch this. This is, I think, a really important movie, 12, 13 years old, because they're exposed to this on a day-to-day basis. So to understand the inner workings of truly the sexual revolution, the sexual movement that is targeting young teenagers. I mean, Don, I don't know if you heard about this. I know you left California for Oregon, but in the state of California, Planned Parenthood is in the pocket of the legislators. They're proposing legislation right now that would put a sexual hotline number on every single school ID of a high school student so that they have Planned Parenthood's number inside their pocket.
I had not heard that. I mean, it's not surprising, but I guess reason number 6 million and 40 to find an alternate school option or something. You make a good point though, Timmy. I think, and that's something people should need to realize. Being in the pocket of the politicians, mm-hmm. the money that flows between politics and big business like Planned Parenthood is ridiculous, and so it's all tied together and very insidious.
Coming up on the show, First Class Army Sergeant shares his story. We're going to be talking about it, of how he was the first non-binary person. And also, forget Alexa, forget Siri. There's now a gender-neutral AI voice. Really creepy. We'll be talking about that coming up. But Don, this is Trending with Tim Ray. That's Don Johnson, by the way. Sam Smith has come out this last week, and he's one of the musicians behind the latest James Bond movie. And he's come out as gender queer. Now, this is really interesting. He's identifying as non-binary, not male or female.
Yeah, and every time I read one of these stories, I sort of have to, I don't know, you almost have to get into a fog to try to to figure out what exactly they're getting at. So Sam, apparently, this was actually interesting to me. He actually came out as gay when he was 10, had liposuction at 12.
Gosh.
To remove breasts and excess levels of estrogen. I mean, I'm interested. I'm not sure, and I haven't read too deeply into the story. I'd be interested in his story before that, actually. And this is something that comes up with the other story you mentioned about the military guy, that the backstory, the abuse and stuff that happens, and I don't know Sam's story. I'm just saying that if you're coming out as gay when you're 10 and having liposuction at 12 and everybody's cheering you on with this, there are some deeper issues here that need to be resolved.
Absolutely. And that's what's at the heart of this retired Army sergeant that we're going to get to a little later. You know, Sam Smith, this is the untold story. And I remember this is something I love that Camille Paglia, who's a self-proclaimed lesbian, but also major commentator on a lot of issues, has numerous books, major feminist. But even in identifying as a lesbian, she still has, over the years, been in favor of one man, one woman marriage, for example, and the importance of children having both the male and female model in parenting. But not only that, she's really come out and pointed to the one thing that you can't talk about is the abuse that many people who have same-sex attraction have experienced in their childhood.
It Yeah, and that's entirely, I mean, the percentages, I would suggest, I mean, it used to be about 99. I mean, it used to be almost 100 that you would go and you could walk through, for instance, the White Party. You remember reading stories on the White Party in Palm Springs, which is this huge gay extravaganza that they have. I was actually there in Palm Springs one time. And
not at the party.
At the party. I just happened to be in Palm Springs. And I'm like, what is going on? But you can actually, they went through and interviewed each person. And to a person, they had had a past that was filled with sexual abuse. You could have, well, when was the first time you were abused? Oh, well, I was 8 or I was 6. Mm-hmm. And it's just so sad. Today, I would be a little bit more hesitant today, Timory, because of the social pressure that is put on young people to conform, to just to be cool, right? To be like gay because you're cool or transgender because it's cool now. And so I suppose those percentages might vary a little bit because of the cultural pressure. But historically, they're entirely and intimately linked, that the refusal to talk about that is one of the great tragedies of our time, I think.
And that's the story of Daniel Mattson. You and I interviewed him a couple years ago and his book, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, came out. And I have to say, this is a fantastic resource. If you've not read the story of his life and his challenges with same-sex attraction, forms of sexual interaction as a little boy with other little boys, and the impact of pornography on his story, it's really important to see that when we deviate from male-female sexuality within the context of marriage, it creates disordered patterns in how we live out our sexuality, whether you're interacting with someone of the same sex or the opposite sex. I was just talking to someone the other day about this and how, you know, women who know that these men are not good for them yet continue to entertain relationships and conversations because they've created a sexual, chemical, emotional bond that has bonded the two together in a very unique way that's unforgettable.
Yeah, that's an interesting phenomenon in the culture, isn't it, Timory? The notion that women go out and enter into, quote, relationships knowing that they are not good. In fact, a professor I had at Franciscan, Dr. Ashe, calls it the Taylor Swift syndrome, TS syndrome. He calls it, if you look at the lyrics of every Taylor Swift song, basically, they're all about, I know you're bad for me. I know I'm going to end up crying on the floor. I know that this is a disaster waiting to happen, yet I'm going to enter into it anyway. I mean, it's literally every song. And listen, I like her music. You know, we list, but it is an interesting phenomenon that women know that this is gonna hurt, this is gonna be bad. You know, the young lady I talked to in Unprotected that was date raped, she's like, yeah, everybody knows that the morning after is not, nobody liked it, and yet they continue, it's flabbergasting in one way, sad in another, Yeah, we just need to keep getting the message out.
Here's something that stood out to me in Sam Smith's story. He talks about how you are a mixture of all these different things. You are your own special creation. And he's talking about how I'm not male or female. And it really stands out to me that Sam Smith is saying you're your own special creation. He's so right. But the problem is that he's trying to create his own creation rather than recognizing you are created with a purpose and you are unrepeatable. And I think that that's at the heart of this issue. So many people don't see that my life has meaning. My sexuality has meaning. My call to do good has meaning. And I am made perfect in the eyes of the beholder.
Yeah, this is a deep philosophical statement that actually has a deep history in really anti-Christian thought. You know, we it's now come to the fore as what's called postmodernism, but for hundreds and hundreds of years, we have been dealing with this issue of, do I have a nature that I must conform to, right? Like, am I something? Do I have a meaning that's inherent in me? And that if I want to live a happy and fulfilled life, I need to conform myself to that. Or am I a blank slate, a tabula rasa, and can I create my own reality and therefore my own happiness? And of course, in today's culture, that's the one that is popular. But of course, that's a big lie. I mean, it's a big lie all the way to the Garden of Eden, right? Like, you can be your own God is what Satan told Adam and Eve. Like, you don't need to conform to what God has made you. You can be God and make your own way. And of course, that's a disaster. And I saw that too in that article. It was interesting that he was so excited explicit about it, Sam Smith, that he said, you know, it's we don't have a meaning, we don't have a gender. It's up to us to create. And of course, that's a lie. You cannot. You have meaning in and of yourself. You have the choice to conform to it or not. But it's not up to you to be the creator, ultimately.
Hmm. Well, and isn't this the story when we look at Jamie Shoup? Jamie Shoup's retired from the Army. He's a sergeant first class. And it's interesting because he tells his story of, I made history. I was the first non-binary identifying person who fought the court battles to have that be in my birth certificate, who fought the court battles to have that be in my driver's license. But just a few years later, and it's actually, he's someone we talked about on the show years ago. Here he is as of February saying his psyche is eternally scarred from what happened and how, you know, he may not have gone through the full medical surgery to transition his gender, which you can't do is what he's saying. You know, there are medical ramifications, there are psychological ramifications, but because it's trendy to be pro-transgender, not even psychologists can do anything but affirm you and encourage any sort of transition.
Yeah, this is a must-read story, and of course, I'm sure you've got it on the Twitter feed, but Jamie Shoup is very clear. It seems like he has really good self-awareness now, coming through all of this, about just how scarred he is now, but also how scarred he was when he started this whole journey. Mm-hmm. He talks about being convinced that he was a woman during a severe mental health crisis way back in 2013, where he asked for a hormone prescription and threatened the nurse that if they didn't give him the drugs, that he would just get them off the internet anyway. And he had chronic post-traumatic stress disorder coming out of the military. We know, again, it's a very underreported aspect of our culture, but huge PTSD problems within the military coming back from war. And he realizes that now. He's like, we watched all this porn. We're fighting. We have all of these psychological, emotional problems. And as part of that, it played out for me as wanting to dress like a woman and such. And he says, I should have been treated, but instead he was given the drugs. I mean, it's really so much sadness involved here.
It's heartbreaking when you read his story and he talks about how, you know, like you said, he threatened the one person who's like, maybe this wouldn't be good for you. But this is the story of today. And even in the state of California last year, and it's going to be reintroduced in California, there is this push to make it so that all psychologists could only affirm a person in their current gender or sexual identity, and that there can't be any questions asked. This is really scary. And in fact, it's what's already happening for anyone who's a minor in multiple states across the nation, that if a child identifies as transgender or same-sex attracted, you can only affirm and almost encourage that, but can't kind of dig away at the issue.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So he comes in having been traumatized, addicted to porn, having all sorts of abuse in his past, having PTSD, and wants to do this thing. In the past, it would have been the proper and healthy thing to say, you need some therapy, you've obviously got some issues, we need to help you work through this. And now it's literally, as you're saying, Timmy, against the law to do that now. Like, even if you wanted to help, we've set up this structure now where you couldn't.
Yes.
Like, it's like, how evil is that, that those who even wanted to do good now cannot? It's almost unimaginable the damage that we are doing to you know, 10-year-olds. It's the previous story we talked about, the guy was getting hormones at 10 and 12. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because Jamie Shoup shares in his story about how he really identifies with one. Dr. Ray Blanchard talks about how when people like himself experience transgenderism, it's usually two type of people. And Jamie's really saying, yes, I identify with this. One is really the man who is identifying as same-sex attracted to other men. And the other, which Jamie puts himself in, is those men who are attracted to the thought or the image image of viewing themselves as female. And he said, for me, that was it. And that's actually specifically classified, if we were look at it from a psychological perspective, as autogynephilia. And so that's where you want to view yourself as the opposite sex. Now, right away, like you said, he refers to this as being tied to pornography. And pornography is just another one of those sexual deviances that I remember 15 years ago hearing adults in my life who would justify, well, you know, what harm are you really doing besides, you know, the harm of the person acting? And you're not cheating or harming your spouse. You're not harming yourself.
Yeah, I mean, the porn and the he was sexually abused as a child, he says, too, by a male relative. Yeah. His parents severely beat him. He'd been exposed to so much violence. I mean, he's the classic case of needing help. And then he says he gets in the army, watches a lot of pornography. He's married. This is interesting. He's married to a woman who couldn't become the ideal female that he wanted. So he became that female instead in his head, which is what you were talking about. I mean, the whole story, Timmy, just screams, here's a person who needs help, right? Like, please come and help. And yet we basically pour gasoline on the fire here.
Mm-hmm. He's talking about how the medical field's terrified of going up against this agenda. And he said it's specifically the men who are identifying as transgender, same-sex attracted, who are really pushing the dialogue, and they're winning. Because the reality is that the medical field and the psychological field did not help Jamie. But instead, he says it at one point, he said that community, the medical community, he quote says, hid me in the women's bathroom with people's wives and daughters.
Yeah, devastating line, yeah. Instead of going by the diagnostic code that he should have, which should read transvestic disorder, that's 302.3 in the VA manual, at least it used to be, he was, as you said, sent to the women's bathroom. Yikes.
And this is scary because, I mean, we're talking, I mean, it's been interesting to see some of the videos that came out, especially a couple of years ago when we were talking really about this transgender bathroom law and how especially people who have experienced sexual abuse and how they're saying, I'm terrified to go into a restroom knowing that it is perfectly acceptable for a man to walk into a woman's restroom. And I don't know if you remember when we covered the story about at Disneyland where this happened.
Right. And you think, who is it that wants to go into, you know, the debate was, well, we need to be fair and all the rest of it. And it was never really about healthy people, was it? I mean, I think that's the issue where it's like, it's not that you're sending healthy people into the other gender's bathroom. It's the unhealthy. And that's really the danger, isn't it?
It's outright scary.
Yeah.
It's scary that we have accepted that as a population. Now, what's interesting about Jamie's story as well is he talks about how, you know, he goes through all this hormonal replacement therapy that's like hundreds of times the amount of like a birth control pill that he's receiving at times in terms of his medical treatment. And he said, yet in doing this, he said he took up the stereotypes of women, the way women dress, the long hair, the makeup, not who women are. And this is what's so scary is we're trying to remove men and women from being placed into boxes of stereotypes. At the same time, that same community, that feminist pro-transgender community, is also putting stereotypes on people as well.
Yeah, the stereotype thing is one of those big illogical deals. And I see it actually, you see a little bit of the battle between sort of old school feminists these days and the transgender movement, do you? They're starting to really butt heads a little bit because of the notion of, well, what does it mean to be a woman? If I'm fighting for women's equality, what does that mean? Well, not stereotypes about cooking and cleaning. Okay, then, well, what? Well, is it having a vagina? Well, no, not anymore, right? That's what the trans, what is it, right? And so they've denied what it actually, any sort of definition of what it means to be a woman. Well, if you deny every definition of what it is to be a woman, that's pretty hard to have a feminist movement at that point. And so then you're just, again, that's what I was talking about at the beginning of the show. Your head has to kind of go into a fog to even start deal with some of this literature on this stuff.
It is so true, Don. And, you know, what's interesting is he said at the same time, people's heads didn't go into a fog because Jamie's saying, I didn't look anything like a female. People on the streets agreed. He talks about the harsh stares, and the reality was there that he was a fraudulent looking woman. And he says biological sex is immutable. And isn't that the truth? And he himself says that this is what he needed to hear from medical professionals, affirming him as a person, but seeing sex, biological sex, chromosomal knowledge, literally the hundreds of biological differences in the body, they matter.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
Okay, looking at what's going on right now, I was shocked as I was leaving the studio last week that there was a major breaking story that the FBI has investigated multiple college universities across the nation, along with having arrested close to 50 people now, some of whom being major actresses such as Lori Loughlin, one of them, and Felicity Huffman, who were both involved in cheating and paying to get their children into major universities. I have with me Don Johnson. Don, what's your take on this?
You know, this is one of those stories where I'm actually not surprised. And I have a bit of a reputation, I guess, among some of my friends and families of being overly cynical when it comes to American institutions. You know, like I think, you know what, they're corrupt. You know, the guy cheated, you know, like especially with sports and buying athletes and all of this stuff. And I feel a little bit justified in this because this doesn't, frankly, surprise me too much. I think the system is dirty from the ground up. And it's amazing, perhaps, that they were just so bold about it. Like they're just approaching this guy like, okay, I need to get my daughter into, you know, USC or whatever. All right, I need $500,000 and we're going to fake that she can actually row a boat and you're going to put her on the crew team and we're going to go and fake pictures and Photoshop pictures or whatever of her, you know, doing the rowing machine or some nonsense. I mean, just that sort of stuff is a little bit shocking. Like, wouldn't you be a little more subtle? But otherwise, I'm not that surprised. I think money buys a lot of corruption. Money and corruption go together, whether it's the halls of academia or you know, politics, like we talked about in the first segment with Planned Parenthood. And I mean, just money corrupts, and it does a lot in some of these powerful institutions.
You know, just looking at the FBI investigation when they released their press conference last week, it is a huge difference, and one of them says this, between naming a building and making a donation to kind of give your child an up with your connections. And, you know, and again, that's still some sort of a bio, but here they're outright manipulating, cheating with scores. And sometimes the kids did not know this. They're altering profiles, creating sports profiles, like you said. It's heartbreaking because these are some of the most privileged individuals in terms of financially. They can have any tutor that they want to get ahead, but also ultimately, it should be a hard work and talent that truly gets you into these schools. And it brings up the question, John, should everyone be going to university?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think the short answer to that actually is no, that not everybody needs to go to a four-year degree, that it is a bit of a scam, especially with all the government money that is now pouring into it. Right. And that, you know, in many ways, a lot of people would be better off, as people like Mike Rowe have pointed out, doing some sort of trade, you know, doing some sort of vocational school, making more money ultimately than they would having, you know, $200,000 of debt hanging over them and this sort of thing. So, yeah, I don't think you need to go to school. And I do think that a couple other points you mentioned, though, Timmy, before we move on to that, are worth sort of resting on. There is sort of the ideal in America that, hey, hard work gets you where you need to go. And to the underclass, I think they've, a lot of times, especially those of color, have said, you know, that's actually not always true, that there are systems in place that are discriminatory towards the powerful. And, of course, this is a very biblical notion. And I think this is one of those examples where when somebody says the system is corrupt and other people say, well, no, I mean, it's not the system, it's just particularly bad people. No, this is an example where the system actually is corrupt, where not only do people who have a lot of money and can put their names on buildings, which I just think, I mean, the line between that and the straight out bribery, there is a line, but it's a fine one, frankly, it's a fine one. That's an issue for people who think that, you know, just everybody just work hard and you can get ahead. Well, the guy who worked hard but, and actually maybe was a good rower, for example, and is now not on the team because mm-hmm. Felicity Huffman or Lori Loughlin's kid is on the crew team, but not on the crew team, is a tragedy. And I think that especially within certain communities within Christianity, we need to pay more attention to that.
Absolutely. And I look at it too. I have to take from a different perspective, and we'll come back to this whole topic of whether or not your child or you should go to college. And we're not coming from a biased perspective of, oh, no, you just shouldn't go at all. I mean, we're both ones with degrees in higher education, not just undergraduate degrees, but it's something to be discussed. And we'll talk about that in a second. But the one thing that was really disappointing to me, and I actually have friends who know some of the people who are involved in the cheating scandal. But for me, I look at Lori Loughlin, for example, and Aunt Becky, right, from Fuller House, someone who has been involved in more, not only acting, but producing some of these more positively uplifting movies, even being involved with Hallmark that have some better messages. You're a Christian. I expected more. And I think that that's part of what's so frustrating to me. Like, she's one that kind of just, for me, hit a little hard.
Yeah. Well, and this is interesting, too. And one aspect that sort of piggybacks on that. So these are people, like you said, that already are the 1%, right? Like, they're already, they're mm-hmm. famous. They've got power. They've already got money. The kid, I don't know if it was Lori Loughlin's kid or the other one, is like a huge Instagram star.
Yes, it's Lori Loughlin's daughter who ended up at USC. And
yeah.
She's like, not only, she's kind of sponsored in a way by Sephora to do these yeah. makeup tutorial videos.
She's famous in her own right. I mean, she has what most other people in the world would consider a very successful, quote, career. I mean, actually, let's legit. I mean, she actually does. She puts product out. She gets paid for it. She's well-known, making money on her own. Even if she wasn't making money, the parents have money. What's interesting to me here, though, Timory, is even with all of that, they felt the need to add on to that the degree from a prestigious university. And that just makes me ask some questions. For instance, who's that for? Like, who are you getting the degree for? Is it for the fans? I don't think any of her fans care one whit whether or not this girl went to USC. And I'm hesitant. Okay, I admit, this is a little bit of hearsay. I don't know, Lori Loughlin's heart. I don't know all the rest of that. I don't really know their insides. But it strikes me that what could be happening here, it seems like what you're asking for is a label that gives you prestige in comparison to some of your peers, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
my daughter goes to USC. She's on this team.
That seems like the only, I cannot think of another reason why you would go to all that, because it's not for the money, right? Like, sometimes you say, well, I got to get to Yale so I can get the good job, so I can get the money. I know people like that. I get it. I mean, yes, you've come from nothing and now you've worked hard. There are those people. Jennifer Fulweiler's husband is one of those people. Joe went from poverty, absolute poverty, to go through many Yale and Harvard and all the rest of it. Those people exist, okay? But this is not that. And so why do you need that degree? I think it's some sort of pride deal where you're comparing yourself to somebody else who has, all the money and the fame, but maybe not the degree. I don't know what else it could be. And if that's the case, I mean, yikes. How sad is that? I don't know. I mean,
my take too would be both pride and the boasting rights of, hey, this is where my kid's at. But also, I think this disorder type of love where people are trying to show how much they love their children by making any sacrifice, cheating, bending the rules to get their kid ahead in life, yet they're doing it while ignoring the gifts, the desires, and loves that their children do and do not have. And it's heartbreaking because it's seen past the child and just focusing on getting ahead, essentially.
Well, and is it focused on the child? I mean, is it sacrificial to get the kid into school without their knowledge by having somebody else take their SAT? Did you read the one story? The girl came back to the SAT test taker and said, I did a little better than I thought, but I bet if I took it again, I could do even better. Well, the fact is she did terrible. Somebody else took the test for her, right? And so she's now living this lie. When she finds out at some point, mm-hmm. assuming she finds out, is she going to view that that as a loving, sacrificial thing that her parents did, hiring somebody to take the... I mean, it's not loving. It's incredibly selfish, I think.
And how sad for these poor kids. And it's a message to all parents. Because in reality, although you may not have done this, right? I think that we can always see a little bit of ourselves in these stories in some ways, Dawn. And it's like, well, how far am I willing to go to help someone else get ahead, help myself get ahead? Where do I make compromises? And again, not on the level of this FBI investigation of these major college scandals, but where do I maybe have that little bit of disordered love for someone where I'm trying to manipulate a relationship for what I view as the best outcome rather than viewing things where they are, allowing us to develop as we're meant to based on our God-given talents.
Yeah, this is a great point, Timmy. And I think actually a lot of this is just a matter of degree, right? It's just a matter of money. Maybe you don't have $500,000 to pay, but you may have $10,000 that you spent on your kids, you know, soccer last year because you think that they're going to be a star or whatever. And listen, I'm not anti-sports, but I know a lot of money gets poured into sports and getting kids into schools on those sports scholarships. Not necessarily for the kid, let's just say that.
Let's talk for a second here about just a college in general. I think that, you know, there's such an obsession with my child has to go to university. And Grant, I have an undergraduate degree. I have a graduate degree. I loved my education. However, I hear so many people today where I don't remember a single thing I learned in college, and they're not even working in the profession they studied for.
Is anybody very few? I've got, you know, college age, soon to be daughters. I've got nephews that just graduated. I'm in that era of parenting. And listen, a lot of the kids, it's really not about the education. They're not working in what they train to, you know, a year out. They're not. They're done with it. Like, oh, actually, I don't like that. And so, yes, it should make us ask some really serious questions about what's it all for. You know, is it just the experience, or are you actually trying to gain wisdom and character and knowledge? And I mean, again, the experience is something, maybe it is, you know, that's fair enough.
Coming up, I actually want to talk about the hashtag Rosarito Spring Break and how wild this has gone on Twitter. And actually some of the objection to it, I think it actually kind of ties into this college scandal. We'll be right back with Dawn Johnson.
Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's TIMMERIE. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
Wow, so here we are talking about the college scandal, and I've got with me Dawn Johnson, my former co-host. It's always great to have you. Dawn, I have to apologize. I have a confession to make to, I mean, anyone who's listening. I actually sent Dawn porn this week, and I'm not saying it as a joke, but this week hashtagging or trending on Twitter was Spring Break Rosarito, hashtag Rosarito. Don't look it up, or maybe if you do, you shouldn't. I'm not kidding. Just outright porn, and poor Don's like kids walking by as Timmery sending him porn.
I am preparing for the show, Timmery, you know, this morning, clicking over, and I click on it because I wasn't sure. I mean, I look like, oh, okay. And sure enough, I hear pitter patter, and my wife starts walking down the hall. I'm like, ah, I'm clicking it off. What is this? But no, it's interesting, and you'll have to share the rest of the story. I think I didn't read too much into it because I clicked off real fast. But this is on Twitter, and so this is actually, first and foremost, it's important to realize that on a totally mainstream site like Twitter, porn just pops right up there, right? So
yes.
It's not screened out or anything. So take that for what it's worth and be aware.
Shocking. I mean, for all the things that Twitter bans, I mean, very simple pro-life messages that aren't even graphic at all. Right. Rosarito was trending, and a friend of mine told me about this. And I mean, full on sexual intimacy taking place on Twitter. I mean, a guy looking at a woman laying on the bar, and she's naked practically. Just heinous sexual acts taking place on the beaches of Rosarito during spring break. Now, Grant, yes, this is something that's been going on for years. Some people were commenting on the feed like, how is it that people are suddenly aware of this? It's been happening since the 80s. But I think this ties into the college scandal that so many people are so focused on going to college. And even Lori Loughlin's daughter, who's like a YouTube star, she's the one who herself said what she was looking forward to were the games and partying on campus. Yeah, and this is what college has become for so many people.
That was an interesting Instagram story, wasn't it, from her daughter? And assuming she didn't know the backstory into how she got into USC. And assuming she wasn't paying attention to all the people who wanted to go to USC but could not because they couldn't get in. Here she is in her dorm room thing. Yeah, you know, I don't really like school. I don't really like to study. I'm just going to party.
Oh, man.
Okay, thanks. And I say this actually with all sincerity when, you know, before the break, I was talking about one of the aspects of college that people look to. In fact, probably the main aspect, it's not the academics, it's the experience. But what is that experience? It now seems that it's basically 4 or 5 years where you get to go off on your own, unsupervised, still have everything paid for, and live a life of debauchery before you have to settle down and actually get to real life. I think a lot of parents are okay with that. Like, okay, that our kids go, they sow their wild oats, they experience life. And first of all, is that a good thing in and of itself, right? And then two, is that something that we need to put ourselves into debt over for the rest of our life? And right. I mean, what it all there is a certain level of just that it's all just one big scam, isn't it? I mean, what's that college degree? And actually, I know that a lot of employers now, frankly, couldn't care less about that college degree because it's basically the same as having an eighth grade degree, you know, 20 years ago. Like kids are coming out of college and being unable to read these days. So I mean, not the schools we went to, of course, Timory, but, and I say that, I mean, I'm not throwing all schools into that pile, but there is a sense in which you literally can come out of college unable to write a sentence. So,
You know what's interesting about that? I'm totally getting off topic here, but I was recently speaking at a conference and I was on a panel with some other very well-known Catholic speakers. And one of the speakers outright said, yeah, like, I don't remember anything from college. Like, I don't remember my takeaways from college. And my jaw literally fell to the floor. I was so shocked because I think that you could name any single one of my college courses, even if I did not like them, I could tell you things that I learned and that I've taken away and I have applied day in and day out. And I go back, I mean, maybe I'm a nerd, but I go back and look at my notes from college. I use them in the work that I do today and the person I am.
Yeah, that one, we're very similar in that. I have carried, through all of our moves, I have carried around several boxes of notes and binders and notes that I'm like, well, this is really good quality material that I will, I'm sure, use at some point someday. So we're the same in that way. And that's what I mean. I mean, our schools were good. You know, you can go to college with a purpose. Obviously, you've got a master's degree. I've got a master's degree. You know, we're not anti-learning. I mean, good grief. You need to learn. You need to know. People are destroyed from lack of knowledge. I was just reading that scripture yesterday morning. So we have to learn and teach. But is sort of your mainstream state school or whatever, is that the best venue? And if you don't go with a particular purpose, is that worth it? Is a question to be asked. Now, and also just the pagan idolatry. I mean, you look at some of these videos, Timory, and I don't know how you can, you know, speaking of reading the Bible, I mean, it looks like a biblical image of pagans, you know, dancing naked in a sexual orgy before an idol. I mean, that's sort of the image that I get from it.
Exactly. And, you know, if you missed the interview this last episode with Robia Scott, she's an actress. She actually toured the world for the Diamonds and Pearl album with Prince. And it's interesting hearing her story. She left Hollywood 15 years ago, but how even the occult, the witchcraft, the New Ageism, how it was implemented. And, man, people's souls are just being outright destroyed by the debauchery, as you're saying, is just mainstream. And yet that's what people are paying and cheating to get their kids into school over or going into debt. But here's my thing. And looking at Rosarito, and that's Don Johnson. You're listening to Trending with Timory. I'm looking at this hashtag Rosarito, which don't look up. I feel really bad. Like, I actually sent Don porn because that's what it is. For those who are just joining us, just outright insanity of spring break. And how my thoughts go to what has happened to our sense of shame that was so fundamental. You think about one of the first acts after the fall that Adam and Eve accomplished was they recognized this idea of shamefulness and they covered the most vital areas of the body. And, you know, there's this natural sense of conscience to cover what could be taken advantage of or we could take advantage of on another person. Yet now this outright flaunting that goes even many ways against our fallen nature, ultimately.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Timmy. I mean, it was an act of grace by God to give Adam and Eve clothes when they felt ashamed, right? That's what it was. And why did he need to give them clothes at that point? Because they realized in that state that they will now objectify and use each other, that in some sense, there is, because of their concupiscence, because of their fallen nature, there's a sense in which I am liable to use you. I am liable to objectify you as a thing rather than treat you as a person. And the only proper action towards another person is to love, right? Is to give of yourself for the good of that person. And now there's, because of sin, now there's that danger. And so to protect that from that, we put on clothes, because if we just walk around this way, you're just sort of leaning into, if you will, the use and objectify. And of course, that's what we see, right? I mean, to reject God's grace, to reject the modesty that he asks us now in our fallen state, to reject that and just to embrace it, which I think that's what it is, right? It's like, no, I'm just going to embrace the fact that I'm going to use you as an object and I'm going to treat myself as an object. I mean, you see these poor girls, Timmy, dancing around naked on the top of a bar. Mm-hmm. Just objectify me, objectify me, objectify me. That's all they're saying, right? I am a thing.
Yeah.
And it's just so sad, so disheartening.
And we're not even talking just about like an actual gentleman's club, strip club. We're just talking about an everyday bar down in Rosarito. Like, this is how spring break, New Year's takes place. Yeah, this sense of shame. Like, I actually don't really understand how this sense of shame has been so destroyed. We used to have it. I mean, even 30, 40 years ago, you know, I always love talking to my mom about her college experience and how at the time she said it was kind of kept secret if you were a floozy, if you were loose, you know, and how even her closest friends, she didn't know till years later, some of them were sexually promiscuous, because there's a natural sense of shame, but there's also a sense of respect for other people's values. And posting this on Twitter doesn't show that shame and respect anymore.
No, and in fact, it's the opposite, right? It's saying that I don't deserve shame. And that the whole slut shaming thing is sort of that, right? It's sort of ironic in the way that it's phrased, but it's the idea that, no, if a woman is easy to use the term they used to use, I guess, and does embrace the objectifying of herself, that we shouldn't shame her. That, and what you're saying there, I think, is that there shouldn't be guilt. And you need to sort of use those words wisely, but what the devil wants us to believe is that there shouldn't be any guilt associated with that objectification, right? With that sin. That, oh, no, you shouldn't feel guilt. And our consciences become hardened as we believe that lie and continue to practice it. And that is what Romans 1, I think, talks about very clearly, that as you sin, your heart becomes more hard and you sin more, and your consciences become dulled. And it's to the point now in our culture where, I mean, I'm amazed every day. I've tried actually in the past couple of months just to stay off social media as much as possible, because you'll be a lot happier, I think, if you stay
yes,
off it.
I agree.
Just stay off it. But there is a sense, every time I go on, I'm like, there's a sense in which there's a severe spiritual blindness, you know, like an apocalyptic kind of blindness happening in the culture right now, where consciences are so hard, are so jaded, that it's, you know, we just have to keep praying and try to keep ourselves protected, right? Like, keep those spiritual disciplines up, folks, because this is a dark time.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just in Lent that we pull away from social media and enrich our prayer lives. We've got to pull back and live countercultural, protecting our souls, even from just the jealousy, the discomfort, this low self-esteem that takes place from looking at social media. With me today has been my former co-host, Don Johnson. It's always wonderful to have you, Don. People can find you at donjohnsonmedia.com. And where can they find Unprotected?
Yeah, you can go to unprotectedmovie.com or donjohnsonministries.org and find it on Amazon, very simply, just Google Unprotected Movie.
This has been Trending with Timmy. To book her to speak or learn more about her guest, visit radiotrending.com. You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes.